Pops up. Yeah, there we go. Hello, everyone. We're really, really separated here. My name is Chris Whitmire. So what I'm going to ask you guys to do on the far side by the water cooler, come over here. Yeah, you. We're going to become friends by the end of the day, right? Next hour and 15 minutes is going to be one of the best presentations you've seen, or at least my boss thinks so. So come on down here. We're all going to sit in front of these screens so I can focus. That, right here. Come on, let's go. You guys got these reserved seats for some reason. All right. And one straggler over there. Come on. There you go. All right. As you can see from the slide, my name is Chris Whitmire. I'm the Director of Broadcast, Production, and New Media Technology for NASCAR and IMSA. One of the first things I like to ask, come on, stragglers, over here. All right, waiting for you. We got some fun coming up. The very first thing I like to ask when I present to a group is, how many NASCAR fans do we have out there? Oh, we are in some trouble with marketing. Three guys. How many IMSA fans do we have out there? Holy hell, marketing guy, you did a great job. Are you guys actually fans of IMSA? Yeah, sports car racing? All right, what's coming up this weekend? What's happening actually right now? Damn straight. All right. So, again, Chris Whitmire, Director of Broadcast, Production, New Media Technology. What does that mean? It's just a long title that means I get to do really cool projects every single day for fast cars, okay? And for you guys who are IMSA fans, we've got a special treat right now. We're going to show you a little highlight. And for those that aren't aware of what IMSA is, I'm going to play a little video here for you. It's about 5 minutes. So enjoy this.
Road racing is at the very heart of this area of Wisconsin. The surroundings have never looked any better. Huge crowd here this weekend at Road America.
Road America is North America's Nürburgring. It's a driver and fan favorite. Well, this should be a thriller today, Greg. It's a mega circuit and it's go time in the championship. If it goes wrong today, you then only have two races left to recover.
We're into the final moments of the countdown to green.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Air up now. Go to map 4 for the start.
Green flag. Go.
The green flag is waved. Mazda pulls across towards the lane side. Jonathan Bonarino has done the first thing he had to do, and that was get to turn one and through it.
But now we watch the start of GT Le Mans, and the number 66 Ford GT leads him to the line.
Patrick Pile there makes a mega move around the outside and takes the lead from Dirk Mueller. Look at the second of the Fords down on the inside of the Corvette into turn three.
Oh, the 66 is off. Dirk Mueller has overcooked it.
They've been really working on a balance of performance in this class to give everyone a chance at victory.
Fizzy went off at turn three.
Exactly what you were talking about earlier on.
Deer on the track because the curbs can hurt you. Giancarlo Fisichella goes down the inside of turn number six. Gets alongside. Little bit of a tap on the side of the road.
Cameron again going to try and attack. He's waiting to the inside down at a five. If he can get it stopped, he's there. Cameron is through.
Jerome Blakemore leads GT Daytona.
There's like seven GTD machines covered by about 3 or 4 seconds right there. This whole pack of cars is all for position. But up front, it's all about Mazda. From the pole, it's inching away from this field right now.
New lap record here.
55.6
by Tristan Nunez.
Called it before it happened. Jeremy, have you got the lottery numbers as well? Tristan Nunez is into the pit lane right now.
Everyone else went on a different strategy. Dave Cameron is starting to put the pressure on.
Oh, and he gets a great run here, Cal. Cameron through to the lead. Watch this moment.
The 911 does the undercut. He's not liking that. He pushes Velander basically off the road.
Looking down on your GT Le Mans leader, the 67 Ford GT of Richard Westbrook.
Oh, my goodness. prototype off, and it's the 85 car.
Boy, has this thrown this race into a whole different perspective right now.
Prepare for the restart. Safety car coming into 14. 5 minutes and 20 seconds remain. Green, green, green.
Called on the pitch radio.
Look at Nylander trying to do something on Westbrook, and Westbrook covered it.
Westy's going to have to cover him again on the run down to turn three. Look at that, Nylander in the dirt. He looks to the outside. Unbelievable. Look at Westbrook covering the inside. Where will Tandy go?
The fourth right on the inside gets a nudge from Nylander. They're both going to go off, and Nick Tandy's going through the lead. Darno's hit. Tandy's hit by the four.
Winless this year. They want this so bad, Cal.
Westbrook struggling under braking and acceleration.
Nylander has turned. The 55 on the inside. Tony turned in. The 55 is alongside him. Oh, recovers quickly. Vizzy Keller can't believe what he's watching right there.
Came in that car right in front of you. That is for the lead. Two minutes left.
Second. This is not over yet because there's another lap for these guys.
Milner has a run. He's got his nose in front as they head down to turn five. He's cleared him, Cal. Unbelievable. Will Westy dive to the inside? No, he doesn't.
But this is win number 101 for Corvette Racing, and a most extraordinary and unexpected one at that.
I have no words for that. Oh, my God. How did that happen?
Tom Kimmer-Smith comes through and wins in Prototype Challenge. The 33 Viper winning for the second straight year at Road America. And Dane Cameron is going to bring the Corvette DP through for the win.
Yes.
At Road America.
Consecutive 1-2 finish for Action Express.
All right, IMSA fans, what do you think? Yeah, good stuff. Makes me proud to work for a company like that, because millions of people around the world are watching IMSA every weekend or every few weekends. And today we're going to tell you how that all works. First of all, what is IMSA, right? How it was founded, the science behind sports car racing. We're going to follow it up with what our digital team does. We have a very small digital team, and they do a lot of things out there. It's all empowered by Azure. And we're going to show you step by step how we built this entire platform in a matter of 9 months. IMSA has been around for 45 years. It was founded in 1969 by Bill France Sr. And for those who are not aware, Bill France Sr. Founded NASCAR in 1948. So he's been in sports car racing. In fact, the entire family been involved in racing since 1948. In 1999 through 2001, the American Le Mans series was actually founded, and that was an alternate sports car series. In 2008, NASCAR formed what is known as Grand Am, again, their version of sort of sports car racing. And in 2014, both ALMS and Grand Am had merged together to create one cohesive sports car racing series throughout the United States, making world-class racing right here. And in 2014 was the first inaugural season of IMSA as you know it today. There are 7 racing series. The premier series is the WeatherTech series. It contains 4 different classes of cars. We then have the Challenge series. So you have Porsches, and you have Nissans, etc., and Fords. And then we get on to what we call the single-make series, Lamborghini, Ferrari, and GT3, which is a Porsche. Racing coast to coast. IMSA starts off at the Rolex 24 in January. It's a full 24-hour race. Okay, it's pretty impressive what they're doing there, switching out multiple drivers for 24 straight hours. It's really an endurance race. you may be familiar with the Le Mans race that actually took place in a couple months ago in, I believe, France. That's the international version of it. And so we do very similar type things there. Again, similar drivers. In fact, some of our drivers are actually racing in that series. So you can see, coast to coast, from Florida to California, all the way up to Detroit, we race everywhere. And for those who are looking at a bit of a highlight, take note, these are road courses, not just left-hand turns. It's left, it's right, it's banking, it's topography changes the entire time. And you'll take note to that last race down there. That's Road Atlanta in Braselton, Georgia, not but 45 minutes north of here. 2.5 mile track, 12 hour race. In fact, today the Continental Tire Series guys are practicing right now, and they'll be racing tomorrow afternoon. So if you guys are in town for that, definitely check it out. It's gonna be a lot of fun. I see some heads nodding out there. Hopefully you guys will be there. This is where iconic brands come to race. I mentioned a few earlier, Lamborghini, Porsche, Audi, right? The best brands in manufacturing for cars in the world are racing with these series. Now, the WeatherTech series is really fascinating to me, right? They have multiple endurance races, right? Where they're gonna race 6, 8, 10, 12 hours, and up to 24. There's actually four different classes of cars racing out there. And so it can be a little complicated to follow sometimes. And so there's actually four unique races happening at one time during that time period. And you'll take note, there's some numbers on the side of those cars, back during the wheel wells, actually. Those are actually being triggered so fans can figure out who's in what place. Those are dynamically updating as they cross the start-finish line. You'll note the colors on the car as well, the red and the green, to help you identify whether it's a prototype or a GT Le Mans class car. Okay, we want to make racing accessible for everybody and have a great experience. Some really great metrics we're all proud of at IMSA. This is just year to date, 10 million page views on our website. We're gonna show you how we did that. We have reached over 169 territories and countries. And for those that are doing the math, that's nearly the entire world has people representing and watching IMSA. That's pretty impressive. We've streamed nearly 1 million hours of live content in 720p. That's to your mobile phone, that's to your desktop, to whatever device you choose, or over-the-top platforms. And it's all powered by Azure. And 4 million online radio listeners, because not all of our fans can actually watch the video due to, you know, wherever they may be. So we allow them to listen to some great announcements, which you heard on there, the British guys. Very entertaining guys. 4 million radio listeners year to date. So let's talk about the digital team. It's a really small team. What do? We deliver content to the fans reliably, right? Virtually no downtime. Okay? We streamline the business process. Again, we have very few people on the staff, and what we've managed to do is keep the site up running 24/7 and supporting those 4 million online users and those 10 million unique page views, and most impressively, a million hours of streamed content. We also want to continue to develop our fans, give them the content they want, and continue engaging them, right? We want to grow this brand, and we want to give them what they want. So we have four areas we're going to focus on: the website, the mobile app, timing and scoring, and for those that are not familiar with that, we're going to dive into that, and of course, streaming video, one of my favorites. Now, we had a couple areas of improvement. In 2014, there were different people involved, and it was a growing brand. And you know how that is. You put some people together in a room, you start to build some stuff out, and you know, you just sort of get the job done. So we had some areas we could work on to make it a better product to deliver these to our fans. So we had to innovate quickly to deliver valuable experiences for the fans. Fans don't want downtime. Fans don't want load time on their website, right? Seconds means a fan goes away when that website's loading. Reducing that downtime, reducing operation costs. Again, if all we're doing is spinning up physical boxes, that's expensive. It's wasting our time. We're going to show you how we fix that. Eliminating the information silos. Again, one of my favorite ones. When a company and a brand starts, again, you're just getting the job done. Someone shows up with Excel documents. Someone shows up with PDFs. We all know that person in our office. And the problem is you have to then share these documents either by email and then transcribe for what you need. We wanted to solve that, and we did. We also want to expand our choices to a wider range of vendors and products, right? So in the beginning, we didn't have any monitoring tools when this group first started. We didn't have any things like Redis, and we just sort of had 27 to 30 servers that we would spin up and turn down. And that was really, really inconvenient. We weren't best utilizing our resources because we had people physically doing this job, right? And that's not what people are best at, right? You can hire developers, you want to build great products, you don't want to spin up servers. We're not good at that. We wanted more control over our solutions. I don't want to have to call some data center from a company out there and say, hey, I'm having some problems, I think, can you please help me out? I want to know immediately, and I want to know before it happens. And we did all of that in 9 months. And what this is fundamentally based around is BOSS. This hub and spoke model. And you know, when we first came up with it, I'm not going to lie, I didn't really follow sports car racing. I had to learn a lot of things. I actually I spent a lot of time with NASCAR, and it was a lot of fun. And then I saw these Porsches, and I got to be honest, they're really beautiful cars. So I wanted to help these guys out and work on these projects. What we looked at was these information silos. We realized we need to centralize this data. So we came up with the BOSS model. And BOSS stands for nothing, okay? It actually stands for the BOSS 302 Mustang because it's the only car I knew when I first started in this company. So there you go. Just no acronym. Someday we'll come up with one and we'll tell you what the story is behind it, but really, it was the only car I knew that was cool at the time. And BOSS is the center of the entire universe now for IMSA. So when you go online, BOSS is running it. And what we have is the website, the mobile app, data feeds, timing and scoring over the top. Every single one of these items pulls from this centralized repository. And it's really impressive what it can do now. It truly, in 9 months to develop the entire platform, is now running all of IMSA. What are the benefits of the hub and spoke model? Well, first of all, centralized security and access control. Again, before, documents were being sent around. It wasn't really secure. We didn't have control of our own data. We now have consistent data models. This is really important, right? How do you spell someone's name? What is going on, right? We now have control over that in one central location. Increase the value of the archival data. Now, IMSA, theoretically, has been around since 1968. And being looked at, did I get the number wrong? Sorry, 1969. We got some fans in the audience who are correcting me. It's been around since 1969, and the question is, who won the inaugural race? I have to go check a PDF. And that's not valuable to our fans. And in fact, as we merge Grand Am and ALMS, who are the top drivers? Who's doing what? What's the comparison? So we didn't know that. So we want to centralize all that. We want to have that great archival data because there's a lot of stuff that's going to be coming down the pike for you guys to see in the near future. Eliminate dependencies between applications. You guys have seen it before. Someone writes an app, someone strings another one on top of that, another one on top of that, and keeps going. And when you break the first app, you've broken the entire data chain. And with this BOSS model, as you can see, it's centralized with an API. And so no longer do we have that. We can have the right development team working on the right project. We improve data quality by enforcing these business rules. Again, how do you spell a person's last name? Are they medically cleared to race? These are really important things that we want to look at. Understanding the business better through analytics. We put data out there. The question is, are the fans watching it? Clearly, you guys are. I appreciate that. But how many fans are watching it globally? And now we can tell that. And we can do this feedback directly to our marketing department and say, hey, you know what? Good move here. This needs to be improved on. You know, most of our fans are actually watching this at 720p. That's high quality video, and I'm proud of that, right? These are the things we now understand from what we've built out. and discourage information silos by offering that central data repository. I will repeat this numerous times. The fundamental concept here is write it once, let everyone use it. We've done that. And again, it's been working this way now for several months since we launched it in June. We have a tiered architecture, right? So, not surely what the group here understands fully, but we're gonna sort of dive into this. We've got a database, right? All the data stored in there. We've got an API, and then we've got each one of these silos reporting into that API and pulling the data. What this fundamentally allows us to do is grow each one of those as we need it. If the website is taking on a larger load, we can scale it independently of having to scale the API. If the API is being hit, we can then scale the API. We now have the ability to monitor all of this, and we're going to actually dive into how that scales and how we utilize services from Azure to do that. Now, the fun thing, take note of that date. That was April of 2015. They started comping out the website and graphically making it what you see today. Didn't start coding it until October. In fact, we didn't actually come up with BOSS and have it really sketched out. It was a concept that we sort of thought we would work on. We started that literally Christmas Eve, I think. We started coding that right around the beginning of January. We realized we had tapped into what the entire group had agreed to work on. And we launched all that in June. It's about 9 months that we revamped the entire system at IMSA. So the first thing we're going to look at is BOSS. Again, the central repository for all data. So our architecture. What you're looking at in the blue is the front-end applications. Okay. This is where our users are experiencing things. The client applications represent the website. They represent anybody who may be pulling this API, which right now is a handful of different groups. And in the future, it could be developers like you guys. Because one thing I've learned through this entire process, I'm good, but I'm not great. And if we can give the data to people who are great and truly understand the sport, we can do so much more with it. And that's fundamentally what we're working on here. But you'll notice right now we've got the Azure SQL database there. That's where the central repository is at right now. But SQL is only so valuable, right? It can do some things really, really well, but other things not as well. And so the beauty of what we've got with the Azure API app on the front end of it is I can now put other databases behind that and present them as though they're one centralized API and the user has no idea. Could I put Elasticsearch behind there? Could I put MySQL for some reason? I certainly can. And what we've built here is interdependent model that I'm not relying on one particular database, and I'm going to take all the strengths of each one of my different product lines. We have an admin tool in there as well, and we actually go directly against the database. And the reason we did this was actually because we needed to get a database front end in there really, really quickly. Could we make the API? We certainly could. In fact, there's some ups and downs to that as well. You know, with a direct connection to the database, if there's any issues with the API, we don't have to worry about it. And we know the amount of users that are actually going to be in our admin front end. And then, of course, API management. This is how we generate all our documentation. This is what you see when you log in as a user, okay? This is how the Swagger is generated, documentation, et cetera. Again, it was all done for us very, very easily. Key implementation choices for Boss. Now, again, Boss is a conceptual thing. It's the database, it's the API, et cetera. We're going to call it all together as one. ASP.NET Web API, okay? Super easy to work with. It was great to build this data-centric application, and if you guys haven't done it before, there's a lot of tutorials out there. One thing I can tell you is Azure, the team that's built this out, they really great. They put a lot of tutorials out there, so you don't actually have to, you know it immediately. You can learn. You can learn with them. Check out Channel 9. Check out anything on the web. there's a great integration between Visual Studio and Azure. Literally, it's 3 or 4 click publishing. Worked out really, really well. Allows us to continue to roll new versions. And of course, the Swagger and XML comments and documentation. I could look out here and ask how many developers have actually commented and actually written an API and put great documentation in there. I'll tell you, I never have. This allows me to do that right in the code, and it also allows me to generate a model. So if you're a guy using Ruby, you know exactly how to plug in my API. C Sharp, you got an answer as well. Does it all for you. Really, really simple stuff. The Entity Framework. Object relational mapping, for the developers out there, you know what that means. It's going to allow you to sort of see those relationships really, really easily. In fact, there's a couple of great screens out there. You look at it and go, did I write that? I had no idea what I was doing, but that sort of built it all out for me. Evolved databases with data migrations as well. So now we can start to iterate and we can make changes to it and have previous versions and scaling. And of course, API management handles the various aspects operating the web API, such as user management and authentication. Again, something that as a developer I really don't want to deal with is having to deal with authentication. Let me use something else to do that for me. I write that code in there, right? All part of the system. It allows me to scale it as well. So as our developers are using it, I can rate limit them. And as our other products are out there, I can rate limit them as well. I can see what's going on in the system. I know how to scale it, and it will scale automatically. Key benefits of Azure API management. Security, again, user management, token authentication. Again, things that are natively built in that allowed me to sort of just plug, play, and it worked out great. Developer portal. You can actually test everything out really, really easily. No need to go to Postman or anything else. It's all inside of the interface. An admin portal for monitoring and management. Again, a couple of clicks and you're in there. You're actually seeing what's going on. You're looking at your APIs and you're able to see what's working, what's not working. User feedback. It's on there. We haven't told the users about it yet, so hopefully they don't find it. And response caching, right? It allows you to tell the application to start caching the data, okay? Because the less you call my API, the better it is for everybody. Call it when it's necessary. We've got a couple of tools out there we use for that, and we're going to explain it in a few minutes. Scalability. Auto-scaling with Azure web apps. It's a slider. It can't get any easier. If you haven't tried it out, it's pretty brilliant, actually. And there are certain times you want to use that. An API works out perfectly. We, again, encourage caching in the client application. The less you hit my API, the better for everybody, the faster performance you get. Hit it when you need to. We enforce that out there. Response caching with the APIM. monitoring control usage with APIM. One of my favorite ones, we got to experience this one a couple weeks ago, SQL database with geo-replication. A couple of clicks, and I'm now geo-redundant, whether I'm in different data centers in the United States or across the world, depending on what my needs are. A couple of clicks, you're set up and ready to go. And that's really, really important when you build everything around a company on this one centralized database. You want to have the redundancy. And again, as not a SQL genius here, a couple of clicks and we were redundant, good to go. And high availability with Traffic Manager. Again, I can layer Traffic Manager on it, which can go across multiple geographic locations and direct the traffic accordingly, okay? So allows us, if one data center goes down, the users have no idea, let's move into another data center. Brilliantly simple, really easy to set up. Next, we're gonna look at the website. Beautiful, it's a really amazing website, actually. You know, the previous version had been around for 7-8 years. New technology, new ways of thinking about things, responsive design, our favorite thing, Bootstrap out there. What we've done in this form, we've actually packed it with new content. We've got news, dynamic schedules being pulled from Boss. Dynamic driver data, again, being pulled from Boss. What does this mean? Write it once, pull it many times. Your user, your admins no longer have to do all this stuff every single day, central repository. Dynamic race results, pulled from the API as well. This one I love. This would have taken 4 hours to maybe a day, and it would have been in a PDF. Literally, as the race finishes up, they end the race, it's available on the website. Cached around the world in less than 12 minutes. And we chose 12 minutes for caching rules so that we could keep our offload at an incredibly great rate. Driver and team bios, again, all in Boss. Live timing and scoring. We're putting out timing and scoring right now. In the event on Saturday, on a 12-hour period of time, you're going to see about 8,000 updates to occurring. And that's about every 5 seconds. Now, our goal for next year, in that same 12-hour race, is about 1.2 million data points. That's what we're going to scale into. Instant scoring, so you can see where every car is at on the track as they cross those timing loops. And we're going to talk about that and how that works. Live mode, love this. Based on the schedule, the website flips its entire look. And in fact, what you're seeing right here on that left-hand side over there, or right-hand side, rather, is the schedule. And that's actually pulling and saying, I know I have live video. Make sure that we go to IMSA TV and show the users what's coming up next. Turn on those live streams. If it's geofenced, turn on the geofencing. Okay, right? This is all really, really important. This would have been done manually. It's now done automatically by the system. Live video and video on demand content. I think there's 240 current video files up there right now in full 1080p. Doesn't get any better than that. Maybe 4K, but I don't know. I don't want to see that bill. Beautiful 1080p content. And, of course, all of our live streaming is actually at 720p right now. It's critical to know why we don't do it at 1080p, because live streaming right now, and the way to watch sports is always progressively. It's going to look great. But we use 720p because that's what our current switcher technology is at the trucks, where the actual race is occurring. So we're not going to give you the extra bits because it's not going to make the picture any better, right? We'll do that in post-process. We'll do some other work, but it's going to be a full 720p live stream right to your user, to your phone, to the website, etc. IMSA.com is truly a portal for every other app, right? So this interface here allows other apps to be updated. Now, because we built this thing really, really quickly, we haven't tied every one of the APIs into that we want to. At the end of the day, this website, every single data point should be coming out of the Boss API system. Write it once, use it many times. No longer do you have to admin your website. That's what we're working on for 2017. Here's a fun one. I love this. We think of Microsoft. We think SQL Server. We think of all these other things that Microsoft has designed, all great products. But the guys on our website team are all open source. That's perfectly fine. In fact, that's where I came from. Reason Drupal 7, PHP 5, and MySQL 5.6. We're all using it in the cloud. Perfectly fine. And the question is, how we do this? Now, you guys take pictures of this, but it'll also be available online. This is truly our architecture. So, what you're looking at right now, we've got the CDN up there. We use Akamai as a CDN. You can also get that through Azure. And if you're not familiar, we're gonna go into deep dive on content delivery networks. And the reason is that I find that developers don't always know about CDNs, how they work, and how to code for them. So I'm going to give you a deep, or I'm going to give you a quick overview of how that works towards the end of this presentation. The user is directed to the CDN, hits Traffic Manager. We split our data between the East Coast and the Central. One of the great things about East 2 and Central is they will never go down at the same time for maintenance. So I don't have to worry about that. That's someone else's problem. And by someone else, it's actually Azure's problem. They're always going to make sure my website remains online. I don't have to call those guys and say, hey, spin me up some servers. They're already up there dynamically. We've got a firewall. We're blocking as much traffic as we can, only allowing 443 and 80 through, right, management and delivery of our content. In each region, we have a load balancer. And behind that load balancer is a VM. Now, again, we like the LAMP stack in our website, guys. That's what they're really into. Can't blame, love it as well. What we got there is we spin up one machine, we replicate it. Currently, it's an Ubuntu Linux machine running Apache. And that right there, we can just copy and paste those. It takes a couple minutes. But at the end of the day, we do a Git pull, and we're pushing the content out there, and we scale our website with VMs. Now, you can choose a small VM, or you choose a really large VM. In fact, if you stop down the service, you can actually change it dynamically, relatively speaking. Really, really cool stuff. Behind that, we've got a virtual network for our SQL servers. Again, we have two in each region. Now, really interestingly, we've got Redis behind that. If you guys aren't familiar, if you think about the amount of content that's actually the requests that are coming through to your site, the CDN caches a lot of it. Drupal caches a lot of it. The requests then go to Redis, sorry, to Azure Cache. That's going to cache the next set of requests. At the end of the day, your MySQL database are doing very little work. And in fact, we can run this on two servers per region. And the only reason we have two is because we want to make sure we have a backup. So using all these caching technologies with kind of relatively one click, we've been able to set this entire system up. We still have our imagery in Azure files. Think of it like a blob storage. The really cool part about that is it dynamically scales. So I don't have to worry about hits on my web servers. It's just simply caching, delivering the content to the users. Again, if you think about all the stuff that's running here, this is managed by not even a full body. In fact, it's a developer, and sometimes it's me. So we've now managed to take what was outsourced as infrastructure and do it with the developer. Pretty great stuff. Next up is the mobile app. Available on Windows, iOS, and Android, right? Three great platforms out there. And if you haven't downloaded it, there you go. We've got at least one guy who's downloaded it. Thank you. The rest of you should download it. It's really cool. It's going to be live this weekend. Again, available on Windows, iOS, and Android. It offers a subset of the content you're going to find online, but it's the content you want on your mobile platform, right? It's really about the race. It's going to give you this extra things. When you sign in with your single sign-on that we have through a service called Gigya, you can now sign in your tablet, and you can also sign on your phone. And it'll remember your preferences. It's a really cool feature we put in there. The fact that I'm a Porsche fan, so I'm going to, there you go. I'm going to see Porsche content before I say anything else, because that's what I'm into. Don't show me anything else. Put it towards the end. So I'm going to see more about the drivers. I'm going to see Porsche videos and news. All of it's going to be pushed to the front because that's what I'm into, okay? And it integrates well with the at-track experiences, right? So what we're capable of doing now is giving you better experiences at the track. In fact, when you go there, you'll be able to see live timing and scoring, live video, live audio. So now you can keep up with this. Again, think about it. Road Atlanta is a 2.5-mile track. In the palm of your hand, you can see everything that's going on as you walk around and enjoy the race. Now, the really cool part, from a developer perspective, built in Xamarin. It allows us to write it once, use it many times, right? Code reuse. If you haven't noticed, write it once, use it many times. That's our mantra right now. And again, all powered by Boss. Now, we're still building out some of these things as well, but authentication services, timing and scoring goes back to the Boss system and then feeds back out. So as a driver's added to an event, automatically updates over here. There's a layer of caching in there, right? So the user can load this instantly. We've got news, schedules, all that stuff is coming out of Boss. And another little fun one is Notification Hub. I'd venture to say it's about 20 lines of code. And you can do push notifications directly from Boss to the users. And if you want to push to a specific manufacturer, if there's a car corral for Porsche, we can direct you because we know you're a Porsche fan and say, hey, go check this out. All available in the mobile app. Next up is timing and scoring. This one is really, really important, but not often discussed. It's kind of fascinating how it all works. So there's all sorts of data feeds, and you know, as we continue to grow this platform, we're gonna show more of it. But I love this picture because it shows interesting views of different screens that are available. Right now, we talk about timing and scoring, but there's also engine control units, right? How's the engine performing? What's going on? The team can tune and tweak things. And again, today, we're gonna talk about the timing and scoring of how we officially tell who won, right? Who's second place. There we go, Road Atlanta this weekend, for those that are fans. We've got, in this case, Porsche over there, going around the track. He's got a transponder on him, underneath the car. And these blue lines represent what we call loops, okay? Think about this like when you go to the traffic light and you see a line in the road, you drive over it and magically the traffic light will eventually change. You typically roll back and forth. Yeah, some of you guys do that. What this allows us to do is as the car passes over that line, we get information about the car. We then calculate it. So between one loop and the next loop, we'll say it's about 1,000 feet. We calculate the difference between that. We can now calculate the speed. We can also compare where that guy's at based on any other driver, okay? Now, numerous loops in this particular case, I have not identified them all. They're not always the same distance apart. And in fact, they're at different points in the corners because we want our different values, okay? And there are smarter people out there in the timing and scoring world who could tell me how that all works. But all we need to know is that this is how you're gonna start, stop, and know who won the race. The problem is, it generates this Armand data. You've probably never ever seen this, and hopefully you never ever again will. It's great, it's live. The problem is it can't cache. Every connection has to go directly to the web server. And that causes a problem. If I wanted to let you see this on every one of your mobile apps, I'd have to have a cluster of servers, an amazing amount of servers. So what we do is we convert that to JSON. And now I can cache the heck out of this stuff. And I can deliver to you around the world within 5 seconds, reliably. It's pretty amazing stuff. So the question is, how's it all work, right? Boss admin, we're gonna create something called an entry list. This is who's gonna show up and race this weekend, right? So it's an endurance race this weekend. They're gonna have multiple drivers per car. They're gonna register that into the system via that admin tool back at the office. Goes into the database. The API now has it, it's available. Again, hit save, API is updated, that simple. The scoring system is gonna pull this data and gonna let our chief scorer know who's the track. It's gonna reference what drivers are in what car and what headsets they're wearing at that time so we know how to communicate with them. The car's gonna drive around. Each one of those little blue lines now has a transponder, or what's called a TSU. This little box is gonna send data back when a car passes over, goes back to the scoring system. Now, the data that the boss admin person put in there is tied to the car, goes to the scoring system, no human interaction required. Goes back into the API, no human interaction required. Goes directly to the website. That would have been several people pushing PDFs and Excel documents, instantly available. And for those hardcore fans out there, we actually bypass the website a little bit and we have scoring.imsa.com. This is where you get some really great detailed data. And in the coming months, we're gonna actually expand upon this and make it quicker. We're gonna give you more data about the car, as much as we can give you, right? Continue to give the fan what they ask for. So this right here is fundamentally how we score a race. And it requires very little human interaction once they tell me what driver is in what car. Key points you should take away from this. Again, central repository with Boss. Everything is pulled via the API. Write it once, use it many times. Race results are pushed back instantly. The second a race ends, press the button, it's updating back into the database via the API, being pushed back over the API again, the way it's needed for the website. Because again, the website requires different data. And these APIs were transforming to fit those needs. And again, this would have taken minutes, hours, or even more, again. All pushed directly to the website for the results. This is what I'm proud of because I'm not a fan of PDFs. And so if they want to change anything or if they realize that, you know, someone should have been penalized, they change it and it updates across everything. Over the top. I'm proud of this one. 1 million hours of live streaming this year. All right, I work for NASCAR as well. We do a lot of content. That's a great number. 1 million hours. for a racing series that has 12 primary weekends in 1 year. Start doing the math. Love that. 720p. The other thing I've learned about live streaming is that not everybody fully understands how it works. As a developer, I've had to talk to our developers about how they're going to build these players out. So we're going to talk about adaptive bitrate streaming. This is how we chunk data to deliver the correct video file to your mobile device and to deliver it to your website. Because again, if you're on Wi-Fi, it's treated differently than if it's on a cell phone. This is fundamentally how it works. We create a master manifest file. Think about like the index. This index is going to tell me which bit rates I have out there. And in this case, we named them so it's easier to figure out. Cell phone, right? Lower bit rate. It's now got an index of where it can find the TS files, right? Where it can find the video at. They're going to be a lower quality. The Wi-Fi, a bit better quality. And of course, over the top, the best quality. Now, for demonstration purposes, I have three up here, but it's actually, to be compliant with HLS, it's going to be 8. 9 if you count the audio file, but hopefully we're all using good enough internet, we're not looking at that. But this is fundamentally how live streaming works. Here's your adaptive bit rates. You can change them, there's different rules. This is fundamentally what we've all sort of decided on, ratified. You note that it's up to, there's a typo in there actually, that should be 1080p at 8 megabits should be the final one there. Again, this is the same concept of how you're going to deliver 4K when you're ready to do that. And this allows you not to let any user behind. So it doesn't matter where they're at, what kind of cell phone service they have, or what device they're watching it on, you're going to give them the best quality. And what's great about this solution is that we can all deliver it all via the cloud. Right at once, use it many, many times. Damn near instant to our users. We take baseband video. That's a nerd term for the video guys out there, HDSDI, a spigot, the video you see on TV, basically. You put it into a hardware encoder. You could do it in a software encoder. You could do it in the cloud as well. Based on our environment, our infrastructure, we have to use satellites and move things around. So we actually have a physical encoder. It takes that single bit rate, the highest quality, or a single video at the highest quality, converts it into those 8 files, which you see those blue lines right there. Each one of those is representing a different bit rate over the public internet. Doesn't matter. Use any sort of service. We've streamed things over MiFis, right? Goes to what we call an entry point. This is the centralized service in the CDN that's going to replicate it. That's the master for everything. That's the blue node. The orange ones, what we call edge nodes, they're going to pull from that blue node, and then they're going to replicate. We're going to talk about tiering structures and how this works, and how when someone hits the play button or starts streaming, you'll see it within a couple of seconds, 8 to 10 seconds roughly. Then it goes to the user. So note, push it one time, goes around the world. Next up is DevOps. Love this slide. Most of our sysadmins are actually developers. We have 3 developers who are part-time that manage this. I'm actually one of them. Primary goals are developers. What this says about the tool sets you can use is you don't have to be a rocket scientist. The cloud has made it actually pretty simple for us. Operations team is small relative to other organizations. 1 million hours of content. 1 full-time employee running this website. A couple of part-timers, freelancers here and there. We've managed to take something that's extremely complicated, put it into a really easy way to work with. And we facilitate collaboration with powerful tools. And again, it's not proprietary. It's not based on Azure. It's what the industry uses. And now we can collaborate. Most of our developers actually live in Tennessee. One of our guys is in Florida, and I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. So we're all over the country. We're constantly working on the site. We're communicating real easily. How we do it? GitHub. Use everything. Put it in GitHub. Works great. HipChat, because you got to find the guys. You got to be able to communicate with them. Skype, for some of our other users who have yet to figure out what HipChat is. It happens. Visual Studio Team Services, again, this allows us to do deployments and communicate. And Waffle. Because developers like to be organized, despite what we may think about ourselves. Waffle's a great way to see what our sprints are doing. How we're going to build it. Well, we've got a lot of things out there. We've only talked about a few of them. Visual Studio, we're going to build via that. We're going to do pushes via Git. IntelliJ for some more application development. Jenkins as well, and of course, Xamarin. Right? So we're not bound to one tool set. We can do whatever we want. Works fairly well. That allows us to be really agile and hire different developers with different skill sets anywhere around the world should we choose. Ken, we own the code. If you're the right guy for the job, you're hired. Monitoring. Again, when we first started working with this website, zero monitoring. It would just go down, we had a problem. We didn't know what it was. We use New Relic now, log entries, Kudu for the servers, and Azure Portal. Azure Portal is actually pretty robust for what it's worth. Log in via your browser, and you can find out what the heck's going on. New Relic sends us alerts, works on your phone, makes life a lot simpler. How we test. If you're going to support a million hours of stream content, you're going to support, 10 million page views. There's a lot of people visiting this website. They're getting a lot of data to them quickly. We've got to test it. Visual Studio allows us to do load testing. There's a certain amount of free testing you can do every month with Visual Studio. Loader.io. Love to load that up and just test out things, how things are going to work. Really gives us an idea of how the CDN is going to handle and what things we need to work on before we ever roll anything out. And, of course, Jenkins. How we deploy? Pretty simple. We're either going to push it via Git, right to the Azure web apps, or directly to a Git pull to our Linux VMs, we're ready to go. Or we use MS Build. In the future, looking at more of along the lines of Chef and how we're going to sort of build out our machines and be much more robust. But again, build it in 9 months, not bad. And here's the automation, again, talking about Chef, Docker. Azure automation allows us to, again, push images out there. The marketplace. Super, super simple. Again, you could pick up things like New Relic in there, you can get Loader.io. It seems to grow every single day. In fact, it's hard to keep up with. So I log in, find out what toys we can play with. And Azure VMs, again, allowing us to scale. Scaling the infrastructure. This really is showing you about the web apps and how we scale Boss Admin itself and Boss the API set. Again, user's going to go to the API management. Traffic manager is going to load between two different regions. And then inside of here, we're going to scale the web apps accordingly or scale the databases as needed. Again, all automatic. Sadly, I don't actually log in that often because it's all working in the background for us. The cloud architecture. Again, you saw this before. This is how we do the website itself. This is taking the most load out of anything. What we're doing here is we're constantly scaling as needed, right? On a weekend like this, 4-8 servers depending, we know we're going to get notifications from New Relic. We have servers already just sitting there. All we do is turn them on, pull the latest Git repo, and we're online. Pretty simple. We have a couple in there that are quite behemoth servers, actually, and if we ever get to that point, we'll hit the button, turn them on, and we're ready to go because they've already got the images out there. Super simple to scale this. Azure Cache, of course, is already out there, 5 gigs of cache available for us right now. So the database is relatively safe. And again, Azure Files is scaling dynamically as needed. Fun numbers. I love content delivery networks. Our peak offload, if you look at our best days, right, we're at 99.1%. 0.9% is actually hitting the origin. That's really good. What that means is we're delivering content to our users in 2 milliseconds. Try it out, go to the website. The worst day is 5 milliseconds around the world. Total offload, typical day, 5% hits the origin. This is going to be a race weekend when we're getting lots of users coming in from around the globe that may not have cached services out there. 94% still is going to hit the CDN and get that content delivered in milliseconds, no matter where they are. So how's it work? This is one of the things that I think that as a developer, a lot of people don't really fully understand, so I want to dive into it really quickly and show you what you can do with it. This is actually our data centers. Our primary is actually on the East Coast. Our secondary is out there in the Midwest Central, I believe. That's it. Copy, paste, done. Problem is that if that's all I had and I had users around the globe, they'd go directly to the origin. They'd take us out. And actually, a couple years ago, this is what was happening because there was no CDN in place. Right? So users would go directly to the origin, and it would load balance across a number of, we'll say, 20 or 30 servers. So they had to be spun up. There was no sort of management behind that. It's very difficult. We had to call somebody. And when one server goes out, you're not sure which one it was. Again, really a bad idea. But with the CDN and the tiering structure, what we're doing is our origin servers, well, they're represented by this blue dot up here, this blue server, is feeding a top tier of nodes. throughout the country, right? Typically, since we're East Coast-based, we're going to get a lot more traffic from the East Coast. And those nodes are going to replicate down to another tier and another tier and another tier. Hundreds of thousands of servers are working at our beck and call as we need them. And I don't have to pay attention to it. Delivering the content to the user, right? So we support one cluster of servers up here, two data centers, delivers it to all these people. So what's that look like? Well, as you can see, we're delivering to people apparently in Hawaii out there, or a little orange guy somewhere in the middle of the ocean and somewhere out past Japan. But what we're doing is we're actually taking this content and we're replicating it around the world again. So it doesn't matter if you're in Europe enjoying Oktoberfest, right? Want to watch the latest race? You can see that, and it's going to deliver to you in milliseconds. Whether it's content from the website or live streaming, this is exactly how live streaming works. Write it once, use it many, many times. And scalability, what we're doing is we're serving these things with a certain time to live. There we go. Taking a sampling, files that rarely change on your website. This could be any number of things. CSS doesn't change. JavaScript, PNGs, JPEGs, right? They're all caching roughly at 98.9%. And the only reason is that we don't want to have it caching 100% of the time, because maybe an update out there. And so what this is saying is that occasionally it hits its time to live. And what that fundamentally means is I'm going to say, you know, CSS, it hasn't changed. It's probably not going to change. I'm going to cache it for 20, 30 days. When you request it or when you request it, it's going to pull it off that edge server and never come back to my origin because I told it not to. Now, if it gets closer to the expiration time, that edge server is going to call back to another edge server, and it's going to go down this tiering structure until it gets back to the origin. It's going to say, origin, something changed. And if it has, it's going to load it across all the different servers, replicating around the world. So now, we're all in the same room. I've requested a file. You've requested the file. It came to me first. And now you're going to get it faster than I got it, because it's cached on a local server somewhere here in Atlanta. Pretty cool stuff. Now again, you could change these time to live rules, right? And that's what we do with these JSON files. Because we want them to expire every 5 seconds, we set a really low TTL. And so now we've taken something that should be a static file, and we've made it very dynamic. And so now we're getting live timing and scoring, but we're spoofing it. It looks live to you. It's actually 5 seconds delayed and being replicated. So now I don't have to worry about server infrastructure. I'm pulling it off the CDN. Fun trickery. So what are we taking away from this? Decreasing the latency, right? Files are now going to get to you in milliseconds, right? That's what the users want, which gives you a faster load time and global redundancy. If I'm caching the content here in Atlanta and the time to live on nearly everything on the website, as you saw, was 99% offload, I can now take that content, and if the website goes offline, 99% of the website will be online for everybody until the origin comes back online. Again, knowing and using those resources is pretty cool, because now I can have a hiccup or an outage, and I'm safe. So the question is, I've talked about a lot of different things today. That's a lot. And there's probably more in there because I've forgotten. But Active Directory, right, we're authenticating all of our users with AD. App services, API management, functions, New Relic for our monitoring services, Notification Hub to push notifications to our users. Redis cache to protect our databases. Scheduler for pushing those notifications. Of course, SQL database running the entire backend of Boss right now. Storage, right, how we're going to deliver this content so we don't have to scale up a lot of web servers. SendGrid for our email, right, a really simple product that allows us to now, as someone registers for something, send them an email back saying, hey, thanks for checking in with us, right? That's how we communicate with all of our users. Traffic Manager, delivering content or accessing content across multiple regions. If we really wanted to, we could have a traffic manager here in the United States looking at both the US and Europe. And again, delivering what was best for that person based on their CDN and their location. And of course, virtual machines. Super simple. 5 clicks and you're done. You got a virtual machine online. So the question is, what do we learn? Well, we have a small team. We maximize the benefits by designing new solutions with Azure in mind, right? Although you can migrate services, you can migrate a project into Azure. If you know you're going to use Azure in the first place, there's a couple of handy tools out there that allow you to work with it. although we chose Drupal and we chose to go with MySQL, we could have used the plugin to support SQL Server. That would have made life a little easier. Again, we make decisions for certain reasons, but I wouldn't have to worry about scaling those databases and I would be geo-redundant. Designing with it in mind, right? Start with the APIs first. You know, when we first looked at this, it was a crazy pie in the sky idea. We thought, well, this would be a lot of fun to do. But we started on the website, the creative front end, what people are really going to see. And once we eventually sort of showed management what we were up to and what we wanted to do and the efficiencies we wanted to introduce, everyone bought into it. And those efficiencies are realized now. But if I could do it over again, I would have spent the entire time working on the APIs. Again, you want to make sure you get them right the first time. But with Azure, we can do iterations, right? So we're getting ready to roll version 2 right now. Why? Because we learned a lot of stuff in the last 9 months. Take advantage of managed services like Redis and SQL Server. You know, some of these products that are out there are just super easy to integrate. A couple lines of code, you've got it. Why should I worry about redundancy in my SQL Server when an automation service out there, like SQL Server again, a couple of clicks and I'm now geo-redundant. 1, 2, 5 regions, whatever I want to pay for. I don't have to worry about it. And the more we start to focus on those things, the more we can focus on what we're good at, right? Being great developers, delivering great content to our fans quickly, right? I don't worry about SQL Server. Fans don't care about that. And of course, get familiar with the services and the marketplace. As mentioned, Azure continues to grow every day. And it seems like every time I turn around, there's a new feature, alpha, beta, whatever it may be, or now it's freshly released. And it's something I've been looking for, right? And I think when we first started working with Azure at NASCAR probably 2 or 3 years ago, the subset was small. And every time I log in, there's something new. So always check back, right? You know, we were looking at building Elastic Server clusters for one of our projects, and there was no way to do it. Now there's actually something in the marketplace. A couple of clicks and I've got a cluster. That used to take me hours to build. Now it takes me minutes. And I can scale it pretty quickly as well. So constantly checking back. And of course, as our developers actually said, because I checked with them on this one, they said Azure Services rocks. Because it made their lives easier, right? When you've got a small team and you're saying, I need you to be a sysadmin, I need you to be a developer, I need you to monitor stuff, I need you to do these 10 different tasks, you're gonna fail. But as we continue to automate these things, we continue to scale everything dynamically, now they can be doing what they're great at. And that's developing and not worrying about infrastructure. Any questions? Go for it, yeah, I'm here. I swear we didn't seed this comment. This is actually something that's very important to us. In fact, one of our counterparts, Brian's back there laughing right now. This is really critical. This used to be done manually with paper, and then the paper would get sent around and sometimes lost. What we're doing, yeah, it happens. What we're doing is the Boss Admin toolset is available via web. We have hotspots available to track for our credentialing people, our membership people, and our medical, as well as our timing and scoring. And so as someone gets registered into the system, it's now updated, APIs are dynamically updated, and so what we're finding is that there's better communication with less communication. Now, do we want to scale this? Yes, we do. Do we want to give drivers the ability to update their information instead of coming to me? Yes. And these are things you're going to see over the next couple of months. Again, we're going to make this easier for people to get into the series and race. We're going to make it easier for our fans to enjoy all this content and stop pushing paper around. So it's a great question. Did I answer it? Yes?
Yep.
All right. Next one. Did you have one more? Do you work here? Well, these are really specific questions. We have a true fan guy here. Okay. The answer is it's called a driver plug. We actually know what driver's in based on the plug they're using for their headset. That's actually a part of Boss. And as a person who didn't know what the heck a driver plug was, that was an interesting conversation. Yes, so we actually support driver plugs. And for single make series, we support no driver plug available. And so as the team registers, they tell us which driver plug they're going to use. Now, if they make a mistake, we have to dynamically change that. The guy's name is Bob, in case you're curious. So I've been informed. I've yet to meet him. But the point is that, yeah, dynamically, that still requires human interaction, but they tell us whether it's going to be in the beginning. What we'd like to move to is a different model where they can change it themselves. If you put the onus on the team can be responsible, and they know what's going on, and they can give us that data. So look forward to moving towards that model. Yes? I refuse to answer that on the grounds that may incriminate me. The correct answer is, at this current time, no. Okay. What we're focusing on today, believe me, we've had that conversation, what we're focusing on today is the driver experience and the fan experience. Now, could we take all of this data, could we take the ECU, could we take timing and scoring and data loops and calculate a BOP? We certainly could assist with that, right? There's a lot of science behind that, and at this point in time, I'm not an engineer that handles that type of thing. We are certainly working to see what we can do to help out the competition team. Go Porsche. I have no influence towards the competition side. I'd like to state that. That is the true point. Any other questions? Yes, in the back. It's a twofold answer. IMSA is investing in itself to get a better product, to bring in more fans, to continue generating money, rinse, repeat, right? That's what we're up to. We want to make it a better product. But at the end of the day, we do want to save money. And from a hosting perspective, if we just looked at raw servers to cloud services and dynamically scaling, yes, we save money. However, you build a database out there and APIs, and also you're spending more money, right? So that's the investment point. You're going to continue to see this product grow. And, you know, we've got an off-season plan that actually I think we have to firm up in a couple of days here, but it's looking pretty hefty. And again, we want to continue to give great things up to our fans.
So would you consider the website and the fan interaction as an add-on to your timing and scoring system?
I'm not sure I'm following.
Well, in order for you guys to function as an organization, you
yes.
have some kind of timing and scoring system.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Certainly, yes. We do not use anything like Sport Vision at the moment,
right.
Like NASCAR would use. Yeah.
So adding on the ability for fans to view all of that stuff is kind of an add-on to you guys that creates a marketing.
Yeah, certainly. And delivering better and higher quality data. Again, we're updating it every 5 seconds. Last year, it was every 25 to 30 seconds. We're continuing to reduce that latency. You know, what we find is that some people just want to come out and watch fast cars drive. It's cool. It's fun, right? Other people are diehard fanatics. Clearly, I got a few over here in the side of the audience, and they want to get some really great detail. And in fact, if you think about the data, right, we're only using it for so much. It could be used for so much more. Right? If you start to think about the future, could it be a fantasy game? I don't know. You guys tell me. And that's what the API is available for, is growing the sport and smart people figuring out what they want to do with the data. Yes?
Is there any integration with your back office, like
collaboration? Referring to? Mildly, we store documents on Office 365, and we wrote this PowerPoint together in Tennessee and Charlotte via Office 365. Not going to lie, it's a great product. I'm a Mac guy at the end of the day. I'm open source, I'm Linux. These are the things I'm used to. And so there was certainly some hesitancy years ago when we first started experiencing this. And every day you go, that's kind of a cool feature. I'm glad they did that. SharePoint, if you looked at it 2 years ago, was something that was relatively painful for me. Yeah, it was painful on a Mac. And now it is, we're collaborating, right? We got PCs, we got Macs, we got some guys on Linux for some unknown reason because they want to use Vi to update text documents. I digress on that one. For those who don't know Vi, be glad you don't know it. but the point is that, yeah, we do that. We monitor everything. And all the diagrams that you see here from a visual presentation for this is actually dozens and dozens of software diagrams that are all stored inside of Office 365, and we're iterating those for 2017, so hopefully you see some new things. Any other questions? Yes?
Why did you use the information for the web server on that Azure file, the Azure web file?
Why do we use VM?
Virtual machine?
Yeah, virtual machine, certainly. This is an interesting one that may be a little touchy, and here's the reason why. Web apps are good. Virtual machines offer more horsepower. To power the site in a web app, required 20 servers. It's not that they're not great at what they do, but they can't be tuned the way I want to tune a Linux server. I can't put Memcache on there, right? I can't do certain things. Now, for the API, it was pretty simple. All I want to do is drag a slider and that's it. But for the website, I wanted to scale them a lot differently. So we went with VMs. And again, we find that in the virtual environment, a Linux box works better. And again, that's just simply because that's probably what we're used to, right? And so it allowed us to, the level of effort for entry was super simple, because we take a guy who's used to using Vi, again, can't stand him. we take a guy who's used to that, and that's how he deploys, and that's what worked great for him. Web apps just wasn't able to do that. Not that it's a bad product, just doesn't give us the horsepower or the configurations we need. Answer your question, yeah? Yeah, it did, yeah. What is fundamentally 20 servers in web apps over two different regions? We could support with about 2 to 4 servers with our configurations. And again, we really tune those Linux boxes and then we replicate them. To be honest with you, yeah. I plead the fifth on that. I don't pay the bill. No. You know, when you dynamically scale, in the sense of a web app, it actually becomes a little bit cheaper. And the reason is that it dynamically scales, and you said, I want only 2 servers or I want 10 servers. With a Linux box, you have to actually stop down the server and be mindful of it. So it takes a little bit more interaction, but you get a little more horsepower. These are the trade-offs of things, right? That's where we're at. And again, we mix it up based on what we're doing. Any other questions? Any new fans? Okay, we got some. Current fans. Any new fans? Huh? There you go. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah. If you haven't checked it out, we are live this weekend. The final race of the season, Petit Le Mans. That's about 35-45 minutes away, just up in Braselton, outside of Atlanta. It's gonna be a 12-hour race, but we've got multiple series racing. So actually, tomorrow is the Continental Series final race. Sorry, 10-hour race. You'll note the guy in the suit jacket is the marketing guy. Hopefully I did okay. It's a 10-hour race, I apologize. I know. But anyway, check it out. Download the app. Give us some feedback. We use user voice on there. Let us know, right? I mean, this is something that we've built with just a handful of people. And again, we have one full-time web admin. And past that, it's something we love to work on, but we have a lot of different day jobs. So it's been a lot of fun. Download it. Let us know what you think. Thank you for coming out. Yep. Yes.
Okay, so you've done this for him, so.
Yes. I currently work on some NASCAR projects. We are innovating. We will let you know. It does. One of the really interesting things about IMSA is that it is a bit of a small organization, and so we're capable of trying things out. Our marketing guy in the back would say, you can try it out, just don't slaughter me in the process. And so, you know, we've only taken the site out once, I think, this year, by accident. That would be me. I'm fully aware that I'll admit that. Long story short is, yeah, it's a really dynamic platform with IMSA. We can try things out. They're really willing to see what we can do, and we're going to grow that fan base. NASCAR's model is it needs to be online 24/7, so they have much slower sprints, and that's for good business reason, right? We're a lot more dynamic. We have 12 races, 12 race weekends. NASCAR has 40 race weekends with 38 actually operationally during that time period. You know, it's a different model, but yes, what you see in cloud infrastructure, I'm sure you will be seeing courtesy of our NASCAR team. Any other questions? Yes. That's a good question, and the answer is it's currently sitting in blob storage. Every day I find more, and it's okay. Right, these are the things we expected when we built Boss out. We have gone back since 2014 and taken all that data and made it clean. And now we're not using nothing but Boss. Over the off-season, we're going to go back throughout the years to try and clean that data up. And again, they had different timing systems, so they had different data. So we don't know how much we're going to be able to deliver and how we're going to. Yeah, exactly. We have a different fundamental model. So what you're going to see is we do want to make that available. We want to know, you know, historically, who's been racing, what's been going on, what the record is, how they compare, right? So yeah, we are working on that. And yes, hopefully we find an intern or two to log that data in.
I would certainly love to see the historical data from Firehawk.
From where?
From Firehawk.
That is before my time. Brian? Brian's a diehard sports car fan. That's Brian Byraltas. He's our marketing guy. Stop by, say hi to him. If you have any further questions regarding the marketing side or the history of the sport, I had to read that from the slide. All right, any questions? All right, excellent. If you guys happen to be at the track, I will be there tomorrow. Stop by, say hi. Thank you.